Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is Tuesday, the 2nd of March, 2021, and I'm happy to be back on the Tuesday rotation again and in with Mr. John Stout this morning until 2 p.m. this afternoon. Of course, you know our call number, 434-1790. You can also WhatsApp me, 266-IVOB, or you can email me, peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. I'll repeat that information later as we get down to the conversation, which starts with a quotation taken from Henry IV, Part II. And in that infamous play, Shakespeare said, "Uneasy lies the head that wears a crown." And over time, we've altered this phrase to the more practical, "Heavy is the head that wears a crown." Regardless of whether we prefer the original or the amended version of the Shakespeare quote, I think that we fully understand what this means. I'll return to that later, but I want to say a few things about the COVID situation and to discuss a few issues that have come up. Starting with a conversation that I had with a doctor on this program about 2 weeks ago. She didn't identify herself other than to say that she was a medical doctor. She made it clear that as she understands that this issue is a medical problem and one which she opined that doctors should be empowered to resolve. So if we talk about empowerment, we can speak about the idea of a lockdown, closure of business, isolation of the infected, stay-at-home orders, vaccination of the vulnerable, et cetera, et cetera. The logic, of course, is to protect the medical infrastructure until the virus wears itself out naturally, and that is essentially what she was proposing. I'm keen on a particular aspect of the conversation that she and I had when we spoke about the long lines of supermarkets, and she said to me that these lines were less of a problem than the potential infection that could occur from people mingling among themselves while using the excuse of shopping. Let me repeat that. She suggested that the long lines at the supermarket were not responsible for infection, and they were therefore less of a problem than the potential infection that could occur from people using the excuse of shopping and mingling at supermarkets and other places, or mingling among themselves while using the excuse of shopping. So her idea is that it is better to limit shopping to hours of the absolute minimum, which would allow the police to enforce stay-at-home orders for the rest of the time and save lives. I have a difficulty with the logic, and my reason is very simple. Firstly, I'm not convinced that a pandemic is exclusively a medical problem, and I'm also not convinced that the problematic mingling can be curtailed. You see, for me, mingling is natural. It is normal, it is healthy, and while I fully accept the logic of preventing us from mingling in bars and public places, the idea of preventing mingling among friends and family members is neither possible nor normal. So what have we done? We've taken a medical problem, we have applied medical solutions, and we have created a major social and legal problem while the medical problem continues to persist. We have endured a second more painful lockdown, and this time around, the courts have been littered with evidence of our failure to stop mingling. And when I say littered with evidence, yes, I'm sure that some of you may argue that those cases are isolated instances of worthless Bajans who are mingling. However, I think not. We have the case of a young man who just left university and his father, who presumably funded his son's education. And they both now have criminal records after being incarcerated for having friends over to break bread. We have a young man who lives without electricity and water, who must now find $1,250 in fines because he went in search of mayonnaise for his fish. More recently, we also have the case of a newlywed couple that is apparently now before the courts for celebrating their nuptials. This, my friends, is evidence of our failure to curtail mingling, and in much the same way that any decent policeman attached to the drug squad will tell you that the drugs that they catch represents less than 10% of what is on the market, I am confident that these cases are but a small portion of the huge numbers of Barbadians who broke quarantine in pursuit of their ontological needs. And I don't know if you've heard the phrase ontological needs before, but it means the need to eat, sleep, seek shelter, and of course, have sex. These are things that human beings do because we are programmed so to do. And these are things that we will attempt to do. I'm sorry, I do not see a man or a woman who does day work to provide for a family and prefers to work for a living instead of accepting a food parcel and goes in pursuit of such as a worthless criminal. The problem, therefore, ladies and gentlemen, is that this doctor and many others have misdiagnosed this problem as being entirely medical. It is not. Therefore, the entirely medical solution will only have limited success and we will create other unintended problems which doctors would rightfully not see. It is in this context that I approached the critique of Dr. Melissa Goddard, who felt that the crisis had been precipitated by serious policy failures, not least of which is a too short quarantine period. She apparently is a respected doctor, and I get that. I don't doubt her sincerity. I certainly don't doubt her competence for 1 minute and her specialization in the area that she works. Perhaps she can draw on 2 best practice studies for support in the Caribbean. There's St. Kitts and Nevis, and there's the Cayman Islands. Both have had long, rigidly enforced quarantines for incoming visitors, and both have been hugely successful. What I also know, because of my research background, is that neither of these countries has there been any significant tourist traffic during winter, and frankly, neither needed to have. Much as it is unfortunate, Barbados is much more like St. Lucia and Antigua, where we cannot afford a lockdown for tourism without major long-term social problems. St. Kitts and Nevis, and in Cayman Islands, that is not the case. In both of those instances, they were able to lock the country down, have minimal tourist inflow, have extremely long quarantines, which the diligent were willing to endure, and not have to worry about the financial fallout simply because persons were able to be given a small allowance and there were not a lot of people to cover. People have not yet started to understand the long-term impact of this issue in non-medical terms, in social legal terms, and yes, in educational terms. And this is the reason why in France, schools are still open, because of the potential fallout from the long-term absence from education. I spoke to Michael Ashley QC this morning, and he raised concerns about the legal impact. He said, and I quote, "Peter, I believe that a single breach of COVID legislation and that person is found guilty, or that person pleads guilty in the first opportunity, should not result in a criminal record against that person if that person is fined or reprimanded and discharged with no conviction recorded." Lashley is an eminent lawyer, as is Goddard, an eminent doctor. You see, in our system of government, there are several interests that have to coincide. And whether we like it or not, one person has responsibility for distilling all the views, and that person is called a prime minister. So you know, I said, heavy is the head that wears the crown. I am sympathetic and supportive and understanding of why the prime minister wanted to reach out to Goddard to discuss certain facts. I respect the opinion of all doctors, the one I spoke to, Dr. Goddard, Dr. Williams, Dr. Best, Dr. George, I respect all of them. However, these doctors need also to understand that this issue is not exclusively medical. And both us and the doctors need to understand that policy decisions will not always match the medical evidence for important reasons. So here we are. Prime Minister is reaching out for a conversation with Dr. Goddard. I have my own reservations as the extent to which that is necessary. Maybe we can speak about that today. But the point that I want to stress in all of this is that we make a mistake if we assume that this issue that we are dealing with is entirely medical. It is not. As Michael Ashley indicated, we now have legal repercussions. We have a situation where a young graduate, bright graduate presumably, of University of the West Indies, Mona, because of his infraction before the law courts, carries a criminal record that will prevent him from getting an American visa in the future. This is the kind of thing that we have in terms of the long-term impact that we have to seriously consider. Before we go to the line, I just want to remind you, last week we were having an interesting discussion about schools and good schools and not so good schools. And we came to the conclusion at the end of the program that pretty much all the schools in Barbados were good except Commonmere. Commonmere was not on the good schools list. Adriel Woody Richard wrote me and he said, "Peter, Commonmere does not need to be on any list. We are in a list all by ourselves. We're not rated among the top schools in Barbados. We are rated among the best schools in the universe. We have given the world Rihanna, Sir Frank Walker. The discussion ends there." And this is Adriel Woody Richard, who is making it clear that he is not the least bit concerned about the fact that Colin Mayer did not make the list, because Colin Mayer is in the list all of his own. But a comment I want to make before we go to the phone line today is this whole question of donating drugs for COVID. I think it's a brilliant idea. I do believe that the idea of the private sector getting involved is an excellent one. As I understand it, the Prime Minister is proposing that the private sector agencies may want to make financial donations towards the purchase of drugs over and above what they would normally make through tax donations. I didn't get the impression that it was compulsory, although if I listened to Verde de Pisa, one would have come away with that idea. I didn't think it was a taxation measure. I thought it was essentially an open invitation for participation. I happen to know that in Antigua, the Hadid family has made a significant contribution and managed to procure and pay for a substantial supply of the Moderna drug, which the Antiguan state has benefited from over time. And I assume that this is the type of thing that is being proposed here. So I think it's a great idea. I think that it's important, in as much as the private sector also understands how they will benefit, for them to get on board and be willing in certain instances to help pay for these drugs. And I see no difficulties there. So I would say well done. Okay, so we are on the line. Remember, we are on 434-1790. You can reach me, 266-IVOB. I have access to the chat this morning. You can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Myself and John Stout, we're with you until 2 p.m. So call me, WhatsApp me, email me. Let's have a conversation which starts now. Good morning and welcome.
Mr. Wickham.
Good morning. Yes, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm great, sir. Yourself?
I'm doing wonderful, Peter. I called because I want to speak upon your last section of the your preamble as it relates to the leader of, the leader of the Democratic Party. I can't say the opposition. But I would say the leader of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Because when I read the article in Barbados today, she said that there's a 6-point plan that she has, and she's discouraged, she's seeking to discourage the whole thought of persons making a donation for the vaccination. But what stands out at me, first thing first, Peter, is the first item that she has is to trim the bloated cabinet and reduce the member the number of consultants. But not only that, you know, because this is the same Democratic Party who have been stating that the unemployment rate is high. So you're asking to send home some people, right? So there's a level of inconsistency there. Not only that, the best program is one of the is a part of the 6-point plan that she put forward, the Barbados Employment Sustainable Transformation Program, that the government put in place where the employer would seek to hold on to the employee, where the government pays a percentage and the employer pays a percentage. So if the government to take the same money that they have placed at the disposal of the same best program to purchase vaccines, it means then that the people in the hospitality industry can't go work. You follow me so far? You follow me?
I'm following you, Patrick.
Good. So I want to make the point, right? Then as you talk about the foreign reserve, the $2.5 billion is created 35 weeks. It makes absolutely no sense. And again, bring me to my second point, because I don't understand for the life of me how the president of the Democratic Party, in her quest and ambition to lead this same party into the next general election. The next thing I want to say is the list that I saw come. I was happy that they pull it back, because when I see her people like Dennis Lowe name on a list to run at Christchurch's again, no, he can't come to Christchurch. He's a run again. No, I'm serious, because we cannot be serious, Peter. You had a whole 30 members who placed themselves at the electorate in this country were refused. And you're going to come to bring back individuals that people already got on the microscope. Not only that, you also have new faces. And none of them up on the ground canvassing or doing nothing, you know. So what I want to find out, because we had the same issue in 2008, when the only person that led the party with David Thompson was the only person who held a ministerial portfolio. So if you're going to bring a whole Parliament. And because I hear they talk about the best chance they can get now is to win a government now. The Democratic Labour Party will not win a general election in the next 15 years because that what the Democratic Labour Party needs to do first and foremost is to come to the people of Barbados and say sorry. And they are unwilling to do so. And they believe that they can come at any point, force themselves back in the race, and that somebody will take them serious. They can't take people serious with this nonsense. When I read this article, I said, well, I go call the program today because this don't make sense. The six-point plan does not make sense. What she's proposing does not make sense because this whole thing about reducing cabinet and a bloated thing with consultants. But lest we forget, the Democratic Labour Party had a law consultant on board too. They didn't send home nobody. They didn't send home anybody.
Patrick, I want to say two quick things. One is with respect to I think that the Democratic Labour Party needs an economic spokesman that will be able to grapple properly with the issues. I thought it was unfortunate that the Verde de Pisa confused the question of revenue available to pay for drugs with foreign reserves. The reality is that our foreign reserve situation has nothing to do with revenue available to pay for drugs because foreign reserve is linked to something that is entirely different. So the availability of foreign exchange to pay for the drugs is one thing, but the availability of a budgetary allotment to pay for those drugs is another matter altogether. And I saw that there was some confusion there. I understand that she means well in terms of presenting a plan, but unfortunately the confusion that has been created with those two is something that I am struggling with a bit. The other points you made are fine in terms of the idea of the cabinet bloated, and this is something that she has been speaking about ad nauseum. But the list is fascinating to me, and you know, my thing is that if this list turns out to have any seriousness in it, I personally think it will make the life of the persons in the Barbados Labour Party a whole lot easier. My feeling is that the Prime Minister will not be under any stress where the victory in the next election is concerned, simply because that list is the list raises several questions that will need to be answered. Yeah.
But I want to ask you a question. Because when I see the name Dennis Lowe, I want to find out what contribution that it former Minister of the Environment Dennis Lowe would have made that would now qualify him to want to be part of a next general election in this country to offer himself to the people of Christchurch. What contribution has he made?
He's made it clear that he believes himself to be worthy of an opportunity. He knows a lot about the issue of same-sex marriage, and he has some knowledge of garbage collection, I believe. I think the issue of same-sex marriage has been the major campaigning point that he has campaigned on, and I think that he feels that for that reason, he would make an excellent candidate because he can continue to speak on the issue of same-sex marriage in much the way as he has in the past. And he believes that this is what the people in the constituency want. So, yeah, so that's the contribution that he brings. And, you know, I think he has the right to offer himself as a candidate. Frankly, I think that the Democratic Labour Party needs to have a serious conversation with itself regarding its future, regarding its direction, regarding its philosophy. You know, it appears to be a party that you use the popular phrase, wash your feet and come. And you know, you're picking up all kinds of people. My views on Dennis Lowe's candidacy have been well known and well advanced. I do not think that Dennis Lowe, least of all, is the type of person that you want to be running into a campaign with. But if that is their desire so to do, then so be it. And you know, the consequences, of course, we will see in due course. They have not wanted to have a conversation about candidacy. They have resisted the conversation about candidacy. The list was put out and brought back. Personally, I don't know why, after waiting all this time, you would want to put out a list of candidates in this current environment. My thing is that you've already waited this long. You could as well wait till the COVID situation clears up a little bit. But you've decided to do it, and you said you were going to bring a full list, and you bring half a list, and then you withdraw it. So we'll see. Final word from you, Patrick.
All I intend to say to the Democratic Party is that I believe at this point in time, there are wasting time. They're going to call it. They called you this morning. You like to speak. Come from the pine. Yale from the pine. Who's always on the back of Santa Bradshaw. Tell you, take it easy. Santa Bradshaw is closed at my prior school. So How would the donkey run into the she ain't close the school? Ron Jones is who closed it, not she.
All right. Thanks a lot, Patrick. We're going to take a break and we come back with more of Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks, 4341790. Good morning to the next caller.
Yeah, good morning, Bill.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I swear, you're right. I remember some time ago, you were hosting the program and you asked a certain caller his age. Mm-hmm. And he told me about that. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a certain happening. And the caller's age was mentioned. The kind of age was 41.
Okay.
It came certain happening happened a few years ago. Now, I always tell my see on this program, if you do good, they can support you. If you do anything, they can criticize you. I had asked you first a question. I asked a question on this program, and I asked him the question the first and only time I met him. Had he gotten what he wanted from the Democratic Labour Party, would he be so critical of them? I support him in the call for Dennis Lowe, and I think that as further going to common sense, I talk about education, no, I wouldn't want Dennis Lowe to wrong me. That's the truth. But I have this thing about people who went to want things and they don't get it. The switch. Because I remember the same caller calling the program and I'm based in the DLP.
Mm-hmm.
So all I'm asking, had he gotten what he wanted then from the Democratic Labour Party, would he be so critical of them? I can't deal with people like that, you know. People like that you can't trust. Now, next thing, amidst all that's going on with the COVID and the elderly and the vaccinations and all that, I am not hearing anything from Cynthia Ford. Nothing. Nothing, not a word. Same way as I am not hearing anything from Sandra Bradshaw as related to CSC, but she's into the care packages and all that. I really want to know what's going on. And I think that, okay, having, as I don't know what's wrong with us as a people, having criticized the last administration for having 17 ministers, and I'm getting tired of this. And yes, the criticisms was just, you don't want 17 ministers. If you don't want 17, how come you got 20, over about 26? And the law consultant. Another thing, I spoke to Dennis Johnson yesterday about, and I understood his response, about having the markings on the ground when you go to businesses. I understood what he said, but and he has came to mind. If we are all this responsible, then car park lunch should be marked outside there.
Mm-hmm.
We should be responsible enough to know how to park our car. And finally, I must agree with you with this locking up people and getting the records for COVID. You know why I go agree with you? The laws are not fairly balanced enough. Care, for instance, and they have been asking this too, and nothing has been said about it, the seatbelt law. You in your car, you're in an enclosed vehicle, whether you're driving or a passenger, you're not wearing your seatbelt. If you are caught, you can be prosecuted for doing that. But yet, people are allowed to ride on government vehicles. I've seen it. MP and MML sitting on people stretched across the street, sitting on benches before anything to secure them, standing in transport board buses and minibuses. I mean, you understand what I'm telling you?
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying,
Peter? Huh? I do, sir. I do. All right, we're gonna run, and I want to thank you for making the observations that you made, your concerns with the line that Patrick has taken. Certainly not new. I mean, we've had concerns before, and I suspect that you guys will battle it out in the future. So let me thank you for your contribution.